NPR network station KZSE-FM in the Rochester area is beginning its second year of quality news and information broadcasting. Thanks go out to all members who support the NPR news and information network stations.
You're tuned to KNOW, Minneapolis-St. Paul. In the Twin Cities now, cloudy skies, 48 degrees, winds northwest gusting to 40. Coming up in just about a minute, our live broadcast of the Gorbachev trip to Minnesota. Do stay with us. It's going to be rather a nippy afternoon for the president's trip to the Twin Cities area. The winds will be rather strong. Intermittent light rain will be tapering off and pretty much ending in a little while. Skies will clear partially later on today. The high should range somewhere between 50 and 55 degrees, but winds will be out of the north-northwest at 15 to 30 miles an hour. And, of course, wind advisories are posted for area lakes. The forecast for tonight, clearing skies, and the low by morning, rather nippy, just in the upper 30s. Winds will be diminishing to 5 to 10 miles an hour by daybreak. Then tomorrow should be a fairly nice day as you head back to work. Sunny skies, warmer temperatures, and a high reaching 65 to 70 degrees. The Central Daylight Time is now exactly 1 o'clock. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Potter. Minnesota Public Radio is canceling its regular Sunday afternoon schedule today so we can provide live coverage of the historic trip to Minnesota by Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev. From his arrival at the airport in about half an hour until his departure at around 8 o'clock tonight, we will be following the Soviet leader's visit. Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley. A full team of NPR reporters is in the field this afternoon at the places Gorbachev will stop. At the governor's residence for lunch, at the Radisson Hotel in downtown Minneapolis for a meeting with business leaders, at a farm south of the Twin Cities, and at Control Data headquarters in Bloomington. We'll bring you the sounds and the color from along the Gorbachev motorcade route as it winds its way around the state capitol complex. Of course, it's certainly not beyond imagination that President Gorbachev will make some casual comments here and there, and if he does, you certainly will hear them. Along the way, during these 7 hours of broadcasting, we'll also have some other interesting, special things for you to listen to. John Patrick Dale from St. Olaf College and Evelyn Davidheiser from the University of Minnesota are with me here in the studio to provide some commentary and analysis. Both are political scientists whose specialty is the Soviet Union. We'll have conversations with some key people. Al Eisley, for example, the public relations man whose brainchild the Gorbachev trip to Minnesota was in the first place. Former Vice President Walter Mondale. We'll be chatting with Richard Bohr, Executive Director of the Minnesota Trade Office, with several representatives of dissident Soviet republics and many other people, too. We may even have an opportunity to open the telephone lines for your reactions and your questions to our guest commentators. And I think I can pretty much guarantee some surprises, some things that nobody can predict, that are just almost inevitable in 7 hours of live radio. So as you go about your activities on this cloudy, drizzly, windy Sunday afternoon, take us along. Check in with us as often as you can. We will be keeping you up to date for sure. Now, it could occur to a healthy skeptic, I suppose, that this whole trip is much ado about not a whole lot. It can be argued, and has been by some of the newspaper columnists, that Minnesota has been overcome by Gorby mania. They say we're making fools of ourselves to some extent, with the T-shirts, the road signs, the hassle over the vodka billboards, not to mention the hours of broadcasting and reams of newsprint that are being devoted to this visit, at which, one might point out, no major speech by the guest of honor is scheduled. True as all that may be, there's also some history happening today. The Gorbachev tour of Minnesota is unique, and particularly intriguing at this time when America's relationship with the old adversary is turning around. Today's visit may be mostly pageantry, ceremony, and pleasantries, but some real substance is not too terribly far beneath the surface, it seems to us, and we're going to try to focus on that during our broadcast today as well. which leads me to introduce our guest commentators for this afternoon, Evelyn David Heiser and John Patrick, or Paddy Dale, as he likes to be called. Evelyn is a political scientist at the University of Minnesota, and Paddy directs Soviet studies at St. Olaf College, where he's also an assistant professor of political science. Folks, welcome. Thank you so much for coming and visiting with us today.
Good afternoon.
Paddy, what do you think, first of all, this Gorbachev trip to Minnesota is actually going to accomplish?
I presume it's intended to intensify and deepen the economic relationship between the Midwest and the Soviet Union. Cargill's, for example, has been trading with the Soviet Union since the mid-1960s. The Soviet grain market is important to Midwest farmers. And American agricultural technology is important to the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union has to do much to improve its agricultural performance.
Mm-hmm.
So this visit, I think, is an attempt to reassure American businessmen that it's okay to do business with the Soviet Union and to deepen an already existing relationship.
Evelyn, I think it's true that this is going to be mostly symbolic, the actual events that we hear and see today, but does symbolism make much difference today?
Yes, it makes a great deal of difference. Gorbachev, though not on political death's doorstep, as many people in this country like to portray his problems in his home country at the present, still needs to convey to the population the picture of a world leader. And this is something that he's accomplished at the summit. But he needs to present the picture of a world leader who's doing something meaningful for his population. And he can best do that by pushing the economic issues. Some of that was done at the summit over the most favored nation status, but he can continue to work that line in his trip to Minnesota.
Evelyn David Heiser and Paddy Dale are guest commentators, and we'll be checking back with them in just a couple of minutes. Let's go out to the airport now for just a couple of seconds, where Mike Mulcahy is one of the reporters standing by awaiting the arrival of the Gorbachev aircraft. Mike, what are you able to tell us out there at the moment?
Well, Bob, I think your weather forecast was correct. It's cold, it's windy, it's raining a little bit, it's very gray out here as we wait at the Air Force Reserve Base for Gorbachev's plane to come. We're expecting four planes, possibly five, to land here. One of those planes will contain six limousines that Gorbachev will use on his tour here. One of the planes, we should say, has already landed. That was scheduled to come in at about an hour ahead of time, loaded with Soviet staff to prepare the way for the visit. Gorbachev himself is expected to touch down at about 1:25. I think they're still on schedule. We haven't heard anything to the contrary yet at this point. Although he's not supposed to do much once he lands here. They're saying probably 10 minutes or less here. He's not expected to say anything. He's probably likely just to get into the motorcade and head off for the rest of his tour. Mm-hmm. First stop, Governor's Mansion.
What's that band I hear in the background there, Michael?
That is the University of Minnesota Concert Band Ensemble, which is going to play a Shostakovich march when Gorbachev actually shows up. The band is headed for Leningrad and nine other Soviet cities later in June as part of a cultural exchange. So I guess they've got as good a reason as anybody to be here.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much. Mike Mulcahy, who's out at Twin Cities International Airport awaiting the arrival of the Gorbachev aircraft. Stephen Smith is going to be actually covering the motorcade route for the pool of reporters that are following Gorbachev, and we will be checking with him in just a moment. Also, Gary Eichten, who is up at the state capitol area. Gary, it's a cold afternoon up there at the capitol. Is anybody around?
Just a handful of people, Bob. There are probably, I suppose, 50 people clustered around waiting for Gorbachev. Now, interestingly enough, this was officially declared Ethnic American Day in Minnesota long before Mr. Gorbachev decided to come to Minnesota. So there was a celebration planned up here with people dressed up in their ethnic costumes and singing ethnic songs and the rest. Unfortunately, the turnout for that event has been held down, I think, by the weather as well. There are some people here, protesters from people with Latvian and Estonian flags, no Lithuanians that I can see, I think because there's just a handful of Lithuanians actually in the state of Minnesota. Earlier today, there were about 200 or so Cambodians, Laotians, clustered around on the mall of the state capitol, imploring Mr. Gorbachev to stop helping the Vietnamese and get the Vietnamese out of their country. They have since marched down John Ireland Boulevard and are now down around where the freeway overpass on John Ireland Boulevard, and I don't know if they're going to stay there or march back up here.
Gary, have you seen...
It's cold, Bob.
Yeah, it sounds like it's cold, and it sounds like it's also quite windy. Well, of course...
Windy and wet.
Windy and wet, the wind gusting up to 40 miles an hour out there. Have you seen signs of other crowds gathering, say, along Summit Avenue or anything like that?
Haven't had a chance to get up Summit, but it, from what I can see on the steps here of the Capitol, and you get a view all the way up past the cathedral,
right.
I don't see anybody.
I'll be darned. Okay, well, thanks, Gary. We'll be checking back with you, too, a little bit later on. Gary Acton, who's up on the steps of the Capitol, chatting with us by cellular telephone this afternoon. 10 minutes past 1 o'clock, live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to Minnesota, broadcast live today on these Minnesota public radio stations. The first stop that the governor, or that the president will make, of course, is at the airport. Then he gets off the plane and heads over to the governor's mansion for lunch. Reporters Karen Boros and Catherine Winter are on the porch of a residence across the street from the governor's mansion. What are you seeing over there, ladies?
Well, Karen isn't here right now, Bob. This is Catherine. Karen has gone down to talk to some of the people in the crowds. There is not that much to see right here because the police have cordoned off this whole block. And so the only people who are on the street right now are people who live here and press people. There's been some risers erected in front of the governor's house, and there are press people on those risers, no roof over them, lots of umbrellas, lots of soggy reporters. And then there are neighbors coming up and down the streets. A lot of people seem to be having parties and then having people over to watch the president and the governor's motorcade arrive. Then from the vantage point on this porch, we can see down to one end of the street where crowds of people have here already started to gather, some brave folks with their umbrellas more than an hour before the president is expected. At the other end of the street, I can't see from here, but can hear protesters chanting, and Karen Boros has been down there and will be back later to report on that. At this point, Bob, I can tell you we've been given the menu for the day. Would you like to hear
it? I'd be delighted to hear it. even though I've had my own lunch, I can always talk about food.
Well, it's not going to compare to this. the press release that we were given says that the opening course will include assorted canapes, corn cakes with smoked salmon, creme fraiche, and caviar. A combined salad and fish course comes after that, and that will feature pecan-breaded walleye with artichokes, smoked tomatoes, and local garden greens. Mm. The main course will be Wisconsin, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this one right, provimi veal. That will be topped with Minnesota morel sauce, right in the middle of morel season, accompanied by rice corn compote. And then for dessert, the Gorbachevs and guests, the press release says, will eat minted sweet biscuits filled with whipped sweet and sour cream, served with early summer berries and caramel sauce. And then there are a bunch of different wines listed, and it also goes on to explain that Pillsbury and General Mills each contributed $5,000 toward that lunch.
Well, I wonder if they're not sort of taking advantage of Gorbachev by stuffing him full of all that food and then heading him down to the business meeting there.
So he'll snooze all off, right, and they can give him some sort of hypnotic suggestion.
That's
to do
right.
Trade with Minneapolis.
Absolutely.
And Minnesota.
Right. Catherine, exactly how far away are you from the mansion there?
We're directly across the street, Bob. There are sort of, given the angle, there are sort of two houses right across the street, and we're on the porch of one of them. Our very gracious host, Diane Fulmer, has given us a whole corner of the porch here where we have a table pitched, and we're out of the rain, some of the only press people out of the rain. We feel very fortunate.
Indeed. All right, Catherine, thank you much. Catherine Winter reporting live from right across the street from the governor's mansion where President Gorbachev and his wife and a bunch of other dignitaries will be having lunch. We expect them to arrive at the airport in about 10, 15 minutes, something like that, and apparently they'll be getting to the governor's mansion at around 2 o'clock. Kind of a late lunch for the Gorbachevs, I would say, since, of course, they gained an hour when they left the Soviet Union this afternoon. Okay, 13 minutes now past 1 o'clock. Gorbachev's visit to Minnesota is really the brainchild of Al Eisley. He's a Washington-based lobbyist and public relations consultant who's formerly the Washington correspondent for the St. Paul newspaper, former press secretary to Vice President Walter Mondale, former controlled data employee. He began pushing the Gorbachev visit last winter. Al, why did you think back then it made sense for Gorbachev to come to Minnesota?
Well, Bob, it goes back to my having gone to the Soviet Union several times with Bill Norris, the founder and now retired chairman of Control Data, in the last 3 years. And over the course of those visits, it became very clear that the Soviets desperately need the things that Minnesota has to offer, i.e. high technology, computers, food processing and packaging technology, medical science and technology, education, all of the things that the organizations and companies in Minnesota have in great abundance. And when I heard in January that Mr. Gorbachev had expressed an interest in going around the country after this summit meeting with President Bush in the summer, immediately I thought, well, why not bring him to Minnesota? That's the perfect place for him. There's a natural affinity, there's geographical similarity, there are just a lot of reasons to do that, in addition to the fact that companies like Control Data and Honeywell and others have longstanding business interests with the Soviets.
How was the idea responded? How'd they respond to it? Why did they reject it initially, I guess?
Well, I guess initially I should say that when I raised the idea with former colleagues at Control Data and suggested that they get the business community in Minnesota behind the invitation, and when I raised it with Governor Perpich and Dave Speer, they responded very enthusiastically, and so I wrote a two-page letter of invitation, which the governor signed, and we delivered to the Soviet ambassador in Washington in late February. Initially, they responded with great interest. They said they would treat it with great seriousness. They sent the invitation on to Moscow, which is the procedure. Everything goes to Moscow where the decisions are made. And they indicated that there was great interest in it. Well, about a month later, in early April, Mr. Shevardnadze, the foreign minister, their foreign minister, came to Washington to meet with Secretary of State Baker to plan the preliminary agenda for the summit. And he said at that time that because of all the various problems, domestic problems and others that Mr. Gorbachev had, that he was not going to travel anywhere around the country after the summit. So I immediately notified everybody in Minnesota, and I said, well, nice try, but forget it. It isn't going to happen, and let's invite him back at a later date when things have cooled down a bit. Well, then about 2 weeks ago, I got a call from a reporter at the White House who said, I understand Mr. Gorbachev's going to Minnesota, and you've been involved in it. And I said, well, I was involved in it, but I don't think he's going. And obviously, he personally changed his mind. Again, you have to understand how decisions are made in the Soviet Union. It's a very big bureaucratic system, and the decisions are made by the top people. And I believe that Gorbachev himself personally decided that, for whatever reasons, that he wanted to extend his visit to the United States beyond Washington, which is something for which the script is written several weeks in advance. Mm-hmm. They know pretty well what's going to happen at the summit. There aren't many surprises. I think what he really wanted to do, and what he now has to do, is turn all of his attentions and energies to restructuring that economy, which is a basket case. And what he wants to do is get access to American capital, American technology, and American management expertise. And I think he sees it here in Minnesota in abundance, and I think he sees it to a lesser extent in California. But in many ways, an argument could be made that this is the centerpiece of his trip.
Public relations consultant Al Isley, who came up with the original idea of bringing President Gorbachev to Minnesota. 17 minutes past 1 o'clock. Our live coverage of the Gorbachev trip continues. Going to chat for a moment now with reporter Stephen Smith, who will be covering the motorcade as a pool reporter this afternoon. Stephen?
Greetings, Robert. It's the atmosphere is thick with jet fuel and the idling of dozens and dozens of automobiles. I'm in sort of one of those airport limousine vans that is filled with pool of American reporters.
Okay.
There will be a pool of Soviet reporters as well, and our job basically is to be ready for that moment, and it's probably going to happen when Gorbachev jumps out of his limousine, unscheduled, and starts shaking hands and hobnobbing with the folks. Now, there are different pools of reporters at different points along his scheduled trip today, and our mission, and we've accepted it, is to be ready just to jump out of the car and try and find out what he says to the regular folk.
Okay, so are you now basically out at the airport, is that right?
I'm sitting in a line of dozens of vehicles on the tarmac waiting for President Gorbachev to arrive, and I have been, and the rest of us have been instructed by the Secret Service that security is so tight here that if we attempt at all to stray away from our group without permission, we will be shot on sight.
Oh, my goodness.
So I promise you I'm going to obey instructions today.
All right, you're going to be a good boy today.
Indeed.
All right, Stephen, thanks. We'll check back with you a little bit later on. Let me bring our commentators back in for just a moment, Evelyn David Heiser and Patty Dale. Al Isley made the comment at the end of my interview with him there that the Soviet economy is a basket case. Do you both agree with that, Evelyn?
It's not a basket case. It has problems. You know, the stories we read in the press aren't created out of thin air. There definitely are problems with the Soviet economy that Gorbachev wants to attack. And I think one of the critical ways of attacking this is to reframe the methods of Soviet foreign trade. It's not just a matter of getting access to capital and technology, as the gentleman from Control Data was talking about. It's also a matter of forcing Soviet producers into the world economy where they'll have to compete, and in the hopes that that forced competition will increase efficiency.
All right, Patty. How do the Soviets do that? How do they accomplish that?
The Soviet economy has to be exposed to the pressures of international competition, but this exposure has to be controlled and gradual. Imagine one is seeking to motivate a donkey with a whip. Well, a few strokes
Sometimes might
get it going.
Yeah.
But if you flog it to death, then you have a dead animal. If the Soviet economy was instantly opened to all of the pressures of international economic competition, which would happen if the ruble was made convertible overnight, then we would indeed have a dead economic animal.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be control of this exposure to international economic pressures.
Do you think that they can find some way of bringing the ruble into a convertible status on a gradual basis? I don't know exactly how you do that. That sounds kind of complicated.
One solution might be to have an international convertible ruble and another, and then a second domestic ruble with administered, controlled exchange between the two.
I see. Mm-hmm. Patty Dale and Evelyn David Heiser are commentators here on Minnesota Public Radio as our live coverage of the Gorbachev trip to Minnesota continues, 21 minutes past 1 o'clock. The weather has not exactly turned out peachy keen for the Soviet president's trip. Nothing so rare as a day in June, as the old saying goes. Well, maybe for Gorbachev this won't seem quite so bad. I was talking to a reporter from Radio Moscow, I think it was on early Friday morning, and she said that over there they were still wearing their parkas. So this may not seem too bad by Gorbachev standards, although not as nice as it was in Washington. He is scheduled to be arriving at the airport within just a few minutes now. As I understand it, the second of three planes has now touched down Twin Cities International Airport, and when the third one comes in, that will be the one carrying Gorbachev and his wife and presumably the other members of their immediate entourage. Our reporters on the scene are Mike Mulcahy and Bruce McDonald. We have spoken with Gary Eichten, who's up at the state capitol watching the crowds there. Catherine Winter across the street from the governor's mansion, where the Soviet president will be having lunch at around 2 o'clock or thereabouts. And then we can go on to the business meeting a little bit later on this afternoon. My understanding now is that the arrival has been delayed by just a little bit. So I think that that, of course, is not a surprising development. They left Washington about 2 hours ago. The flight normally takes about 2.5 hours by a commercial airliner. Presumably, the private Soviet jet could get in a little bit more quickly than that. But they also have those rather strong northwesterly winds, which might be slowing things down just a little while. When we started planning Minnesota Public Radio's coverage of the Gorbachev visit, we knew we'd come across some interesting and little-known facts. One of those little-known stories emerged during a recent conversation I had with Walter Mondale, the former vice president, who's now an attorney in private practice in Minneapolis. The story concerns an emergency shipment of flour organized by Minnesota grain millers to help stave off starvation in the Soviet Union. That incident and other thoughts were on Mondale's mind when I visited him late this week at his office in downtown Minneapolis. Let me ask you, first of all, what you think Minnesota stands to gain from the Gorbachev visit on Sunday?
Boy, there's a lot. Number one is international recognition. One of the things that often mystifies me, I do a lot of international legal work, and that is that people only have a vague idea where the Twin Cities is and Minnesota. You'd be surprised. We lose a lot from that. We won't have to worry about that anymore. And not just where we are, but the special qualities that this state has. There's probably no more internationally oriented state or region in the Union than ours. High technology, agriculture, all that. So I think we get recognized in a very strong and powerful way. The other thing I was thinking about yesterday is our region is now and will for the next couple of days get the best education on Soviet history and current events of any people on Earth. And it's got to have a tremendous civic value to us. Our politics are going to be better informed. It makes us better American citizens.
I wonder what your views are on why Gorbachev decided to come here. There have been a lot of theories about it. I'd like to hear yours.
Well, I think he is interested in a lot of the qualities and strengths that we have. The biggest business, single business in America, buying and selling from the Soviet Union is Cargill. Supercomputers from Minnesota, particularly Control Data, have been central to their development for 25 years. So you've got agriculture, you've got health, you've got high technology, you've got transportation, you've got everything here. And I believe as he looked around, that interested him. The next thing is, I believe that he wanted to do something different. He's a good showman. If he'd gone to New York, or gone to L.A., you know, the usual stops, I think it'd been ho-hum. But he is smart. He said, let's go someplace fresh, different, interesting, and see a different part of America. And I believe that's what's attracting the attention.
Let's talk about the practical aspects of the meeting that'll be taking place between the business
possibilities. Yeah. He's planning to defect, and he just heard about our high quality of living here.
Well, that's always a possibility, too. As far as the practical aspects of the meeting between the business leaders and the agriculture leaders and Gorbachev is concerned, is there anything that can come out of that as a result of his personal presence that could not have happened had the contacts gone on at lower or different levels?
I think so, although it's very hard to answer that question. But I think there are a lot of Minnesota and Upper Midwest business leaders that are thinking of doing something in the Soviet Union now that weren't thinking about it 2 weeks ago. I believe that his introduction on the ground, face-to-face, meeting and talking will impress him about the strength of the economy in this region. And no doubt there will be letters passed and comments made that will help lead to business. So I think there'll be a quickened pace of business between our region and the Soviet Union as a result.
There'll be a lot of PR. There's been a lot of hoopla about this. Do you think there'll be some substance as well?
I think so, although you have to, you know, substance doesn't take place quite that way. It will be, oh, I've got a couple of letters here that people have given me, one from the University of Minnesota Medical School, where they want to go over there and do some really exciting things in trying to bring better health care and training over there. And the whole faculty at the University of Minnesota Medical School signed on. I'm going to try to give that letter to him personally and say, you should really read this. That sort of thing could be not just business, but other kinds of human contact. Also, if I get time, which I won't, I know, I'm going to repeat two things. Harrison Salisbury called me yesterday. You know, the wonderful historian, writer, journalist. He's from Minnesota, and I think he's aching to come out here. But anyway, he said, there's two things you ought to remind people. Number one, the most popular memorized children's poem is Hiawatha. He said there's something about the way that fits the rhythm of the Russian language that it is known by every child and everyone who ever was a child. And he said, you really ought to have Resa go over and take a look at that. Well, that's one thing. The other thing he told me was that the Russians remember Minneapolis because in 1890, there was a horrible drought, massive starvation and death in the food-producing regions of the Crimea. And the Minneapolis Grain Association, the grain millers and so on, put together a worldwide relief effort and at their own cost sent a tremendous amount of flour over there and saved thousands of lives. He said that's long since been forgotten here. But in Russia, he said, they'll always bring it up. And it was right here in the Twin Cities where that happened.
What do you think Gorbachev gets out of this for his own domestic political consumption?
Well, I'm sure all this has been going over, but he's in tough shape back home. Economy's in terrible shape. His biggest nemesis was just elected president of the Republic of Russia, the biggest of all the republics. It's got most of the wealth. And he said, let's pull out, in effect. It kind of reminds you of some of the proposals on the Iron Range. They said, let's set up a separate union state. But he's serious about it. Crime, well, we've heard all of that, but he is in bad shape back home. I think this helps elevate his stature. They see him so well received in the United States. It can help. But how much it helps, I don't know right now. What I'm hoping for is that in this last day of the serious part of the summit, that he and Bush can make some breakthroughs on the central questions. I think that'll help him more than anything else. If we could go ahead, you know, and make a breakthrough on conventional arms, so he could cut his military budget by billions of dollars and put that money into his economy, that would be very popular.
Do you think he'll grant independence to the Baltics? And if not, should the people here in Minnesota press him on that? Should Governor Perpich press him, the business leaders, yourself?
I think that should be made clear. It's clear that Lithuania was stolen. It's never intended to be a part of the Soviet Union. He's admitted as much. They've allowed under him the history that shows this sellout it was stolen. And something's happening on it. Just before he left, he said that to a Lithuanian leader that this could be worked out to permit independence within 2 years. Whether that's meant or not, I'm sure that our hope that our administration is pressing on that. And I think we ought to say that's a good move. We hope that can take place. Because I don't think we can let our human rights concerns be totally muffled.
What does this whole thing do for Governor Perpich politically?
Well, I think if you call the governor and said, now you can have your choice. You can have a mountain of gold, or you can have Gorbachev visit. He made the right choice. I just think it's a 10-strike for him.
Will it last much beyond, say, the DFL convention next week? I mean, obviously this is giving him a good deal of help in his fight against Mike Hatch, but will people remember in November?
That shows how little you know about politics. The great motto in politics is, oh, Lord, get me through this day. It'll get him through this day.
Thank you very much, former Vice President Walter Mondale.
It is 28 minutes before 2 o'clock. Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Mikhail Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley. Well, the Soviet president's plane has been delayed on arrival to Twin Cities International Airport by just a few minutes. We expect that arrival within about 5 or 10 minutes, something like that. And as soon as signs appear that the plane is coming, we're going to switch out to the airport, visit with Mike Mulcahy, who's on the scene out there. Meanwhile, reporter Chris Tetlin is standing by. He joins us via cellular telephone this afternoon. Chris, where are you?
I'm on the street right in front of the Radisson Plaza Hotel in downtown Minneapolis, the site of the business meeting later this afternoon.
All right. What's going on down there right now, Chris?
Well, as we heard from Catherine at the Capitol a while ago, it looks a little bit like a choir concert. A lot of risers erected around here for television cameras, a lot of ropes, a lot of police. So far, the only spectators have moved along very quickly back into buildings, just scoped it out and moved along. The police are preparing in the next 2 minutes to seal off the street in front of the hotel about a block on either side. of the hotel, so people aren't going to be able to get closer than about a block to the Radisson.
Mm-hmm.
A small aesthetic glitch just developing here. Several of the U.S., Soviet, and Minnesota flags that are blowing in the wind in front of the hotel have actually shredded during the last hour, and the hotel staff are on ladders right now trying to replace those as best they can.
All right. Chris, do you think the weather is sort of putting a damper on people's spirits down there in terms of public appearances?
It sure looks like it. As I said, a lot of folks have come by very quickly. I mean, pointed their heads into the wind and struggled with the doors and the buildings trying to get in. It's really like a gale down here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are people waiting in the skyways and in whatever wings they can find, but the streets are pretty quiet right now.
All right, Chris, very good. Chris Tetlin reporting from downtown Minneapolis, the Radisson Plaza Hotel, site of the meeting that President Gorbachev will have with business leaders from around the area a little bit later on today. The rough schedule called for Gorbachev to arrive just about this time, his arrival being delayed by a few minutes out at the airport. Then he'll be going on to the governor's residence on Summit Avenue for lunch, arriving there, probably a half an hour or so from the time he leaves the airport. Then at around 3:30 or so, the schedule calls for a motorcade tour down Summit Avenue and around the Capitol area, and then down I-94 to downtown Minneapolis. That is the point at which they'll go to the Radisson Plaza Hotel for the meeting with business and agricultural leaders. Then after that, they go down to Farmington and the farm home of Richard and Cecilia Brand, getting to the farm around 6:45 or so, taking a walking tour of the farm, and then heading back to the Twin Cities onto the Control Data Headquarters building in Bloomington at around 7:30 or so, viewing a computer display, then going back to the airport, taking off for San Francisco at around 8 o'clock or a little bit after that this evening. It's now about 25 minutes before 2 o'clock. Shall we slip out to the airport for just a second and check in with Mike Mulcahy and see if there's any indication that plane is any closer to landing? Michael?
Well, we don't know yet, Bob. The last word we had was 138.
138, well.
So two planes have already landed. As we said before, a Soviet plane came in about an hour ago. That with some Soviet staff people. Another plane has landed. That's an American plane, presumably folks from the State Department, some Soviet members of the press, some others, they've all come in. And now everyone is awaiting the arrival of Gorbachev. There are about 100 spectators here, most of them in uniform, mostly Air Force personnel from the base here, because security was very tight. They swept the area with dogs and just about anything you can imagine. We even had a little problem getting in. We can echo what Stephen Smith said a little earlier. We were also informed that if we left the pack of reporters, we could end up wounded.
My goodness.
Wounded at best, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the governor, President Gorbachev, will be greeted by 24 people when he arrives at the airport, including the governor and Mrs. Perpich, Lieutenant Governor Marlene Johnson, the congressional delegation, a number of other state officials, legislative leaders. So there are some dignitaries on hand here. There is a plane coming here now. Some people are pointing to it. I don't know if that's Gorbachev or not. I'm standing here with Bruce McDonald, who's a... Bruce, any other word on when the plane will come in?
No. If that could be it, though. It's 1:38 or coming up on it now.
Well,
we have not seen a lot of air traffic here for obvious reasons in the last half hour or so, and the only planes really that have landed, I think, were the official planes so far.
That's the word that we have too, here, too, gentlemen, is that is indeed the Soviet president's plane that is coming in. The reason I know that, you all should understand that, is because there's a raw video feed being provided of all these events, and we're able to watch that on a television monitor here, which you guys on the scene are, I guess, far enough away from the actual event, so that's a little bit more difficult for you to see.
I should say, Bob, we are far away in terms of that. We aren't going to be far away when the plane actually lands. It's going to come right in front of us, and it could be pretty loud if, based on the experience of the last two that came in. I think you'll be able to hear us, but we might have to shout a little bit.
All right.
Also, I should say here, the scene is similar to some of the other sites that the people have described. They've brought in some big flatbed trucks and put the press up on those, the TV cameras, still photographers. There are some press people down on the tarmac actually waiting. There are Soviet and American flags here, the big banner, the logo.
Well, that's either an airplane or a pretty strong wind here in the background.
That is indeed an Aeroflot airplane, and it's just touched the ground. It's just come down. It's going to circle out toward us now, and perhaps not a very good coincidence here. It's begun to rain once again, and so the weather is taking perhaps a temporary turn for the worse.
Tell me, is there any indication, are there any microphones set up? Does it look like Gorbachev or the governor or anybody's going to actually step forward and say anything at this point?
There was a possibility of that, although some of the sound people here told us that it's very unlikely. They said that, especially since the weather is bad, that they imagine he'll be in and out as fast as possible. There is another crew of press down on the tarmac, as we said, the pool press. They might be able to get their microphones in and hear what's being said, but again, no way to tell at this point.
Mm-hmm. You said about 24 people there to greet him, members of the congressional delegation and so on.
Right.
I understand that Senator Boschwitz is actually on the flight.
That's what we've heard, yes.
Uh-huh.
Although, again, the plane is still taxiing out on the runways, and they've moved some of those portable stairways now in place in front of the hangar here. And those, we imagine, will be moved up to the plane when it actually taxis over here.
Mm-hmm. 20 minutes before 2 o'clock, this is Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Gorbachev's trip to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area this cloudy, drizzly, windy, cold Sunday afternoon. Before he left Washington, President Gorbachev held a joint news conference with President Bush. The two of them described their summit meeting as a success and also said they plan to meet on a regular basis. The leaders confirmed their continuing impasse over the military shape of a unified Germany. Gorbachev also warned Israel that he would consider suspending the issuance of exit permits for Soviet Jews if they continue to be settled on the West Bank or in Gaza. Bush added one other disagreement, the Kremlin's treatment of Lithuania and the other Baltic republics, which are seeking independence from the Soviet Union. So there obviously has been some commentary already on the closing moments of the summit in Washington and President Gorbachev arriving now at the Twin Cities International Airport. Looks to me, from what I see, that plane is taxiing up and coming pretty much to a halt here pretty quickly. Is that
again,
right?
It's behind another hangar now, and we really can't see it at this point.
Okay,
so we're waiting for it to swing around into our view. I wonder if President Gorbachev will be dressed for the weather here. Some of the earlier planes that came in, some people looked pretty chilly as they stepped off.
Oh.
A lot of people stepped off in just suits, and the women in dresses, and you couldn't stay out in this kind of weather for very long dressed like that without getting very cold. Mike and I are here in raincoats, and we're shivering a little bit. Certainly not the most inviting weather for a visiting head of state like this.
Well, no, it isn't, but... Certainly not as nice as it was in Washington either, at least the day they had that opening arrival ceremony. It was almost a picture-perfect day. And we have plenty of days like that in June here in Minnesota, and you can just imagine that the national press will be carping mightily about the weather in Minnesota when they write their stories tomorrow.
Well, maybe some of the local press too, Bob. We never know.
Well, that's possible, although we should have enough sense to realize that this is Minnesota after all.
Some of the umbrellas are out now, colorful umbrellas. There's a color guard waiting with the Soviet, the American flag, the Minnesota flag. They're just waiting for the plane to taxi up, as we say.
Who is in that crowd out there, Michael?
Well, it's a little hard to tell from where I'm standing. It looks like any number of people, security people, press people, some of the military types. We can see some of the advance team that set up the operations.
What about the governor? Is he out there right now?
I don't see him at this point. I'm sure he's there somewhere.
Probably sitting in a car keeping warm.
I wouldn't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
They've closed off the hangar here pretty well. They will walk in there. I noticed there was a microphone set up in there earlier, I would imagine, for President Gorbachev to say something if he chooses, although the word we've had is that he probably won't.
Where's the motorcade, Michael?
I believe it's on the other side of the hangar from us. When Stephen Smith described sitting in the motorcade with a number of cars lined up, we can't see that from here. So I'm imagining it's on the other side of the hangar here, and they will go through the hangar and then out to the cars.
Is there much of a crowd behind a fence anywhere where a crowd of just ordinary onlookers?
No, not at all.
This is a secured compound, Bob, and I don't believe that the general public was allowed anywhere nearby. So this is not really the place to see the president if you want to in person.
We can see the plane now. It's moving in. going to get pretty loud here over the next few minutes, we imagine.
Oh, there it is. I definitely can hear it. What about that band? Are they going to be playing again here pretty soon?
Well, they're supposed to crank up, but we can't tell from here, Bob. A lot of things we can't tell from here. We're just spectators like everybody else at this point.
Well, that's all right.
We're on a series of flatbed trucks with a bunch of photographers and other reporters here, Bob, so we can see we have a very good view of the plane as it's taxiing right in front of us. However, the dignitaries are a good 100 yards away from us, and we can't recognize them. They're under umbrellas right now, mm-hmm. and... It's a
blue and white plane with a gray underbelly, the Soviet flag prominently displayed on the tail section. Some Soviet writing there, Bruce. Do you read that?
Yeah, it's in the Cyrillic alphabet, obviously. I can't, I don't know what it says. But we've seen a lot of signs around here in the last few days with that script.
Can you tell us, Paddy Dale, or...
The markings on the aircraft are interesting because they say Sovietsky Soyuz, the Soviet Union. This is the first time I've seen a Soviet presidential aircraft so marked. Presumably now the Soviet president has the equivalent of Air Force One. In the past, when Gorbachev as general secretary of the party or as president in the weaker presidential role, when he traveled abroad, he traveled on an Aeroflot airliner. But this aircraft is marked Sovietsky Soyuz, the Soviet Union. Presumably, it is the Soviet presidential aircraft, the equivalent of Air Force One.
Okay. Do you, from the looks of the aircraft, can you tell, is it similar to an American-designed aircraft of some sort, similar like to a 737 or something?
It's much larger than a 737. Because it has four engines mounted in pairs at the back, it reminds me of the British aircraft, the VC-10, that is no longer in service.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed Evelyn? On there the words Aeroflot written very small, right under the pilot's window or something up at the very, very front, which would imply that it is an Aeroflot-owned airline, not a military airplane, which is
like
somewhat diff.
And presumably they can use it for something other than presidential trips once right. it is released from this particular duty. I gather that they've brought in a Soviet limo for him, a so-called Zil, is that correct?
Again, hard to see that, Bob. If it is here, it's on the other side of the hangar from us.
Mm-hmm.
What we can see are the two portable stairways. They're put on the back of some pickup trucks. One is kind of a lime industrial green color. The other, again, is blue and white. There's a sign on one, Pan Am welcomes President and Mrs. Gorbachev. There's a corporate logo on the other one. The plane is moving up now and almost coming to a stop.
I wonder if the stewardess has told Gorbachev to remain in his seat until the captain has turned off the fasten seatbelt sign.
If I get the chance, I'll ask him, Bob.
14 minutes before 2 o'clock, the arrival of President Gorbachev at Twin Cities International Airport. About 15 minutes behind schedule. There you hear those engines spooling down now.
And the stairways are moving up, some people guiding them into place. Now it'll be a little quieter, I think, as the engines go off.
Let me ask our commentators, Patty and Evelyn, if they have any idea who might be traveling with Gorbachev, who typically travels with him.
Well, a varied group of now presidential advisors. It used to be members of the Politburo and Secretariat, other government or party officials, as the president or general secretary chose.
It's a big airplane. I wonder if it's filled mostly with people or if it's kind of like Air Force One and is just logged off or blocked off into sleeping quarters and office areas and that sort of thing.
Gorbachev has a substantial foreign policy staff of his own. Foreign policy was the first area that he took personal control of back in 1986.
If I can break in,
yes, Mike.
I can tell you the doors to the plane are open now. The motorcade has moved up into place. There are a number of police agencies at the head of the motorcade, Minneapolis, St. Paul, county sheriff, state trooper. They're now telling the motorcade to keep moving. Apparently the limousine is farther back. Maybe, Bruce, you can see the dignitaries. I still don't see them moving into place yet.
No, they're still behind a lot of the crowd and a lot of the umbrellas at this point.
Now a four-man military squad is moving into place with a red carpet.
And in front of us is the Soviet
There's
Zil.
Mr. and Mrs. Gorbachev off the plane at the top of the stairway.
There they are.
Some applause here. Senator Boschwitz is behind them. He's waving. About halfway down the steps now. Mr. Gorbachev is in a dark suit. Mrs. Gorbachev is wearing kind of a purple outfit.
Are they dressed for the weather?
Doesn't look like it. Gorbachev just adjusted his lapels a little bit. Now they're moving the red carpet down, and the dignitaries have approached. The band is playing.
And they're still asking the motorcade to move down further.
Gorbachev is shaking hands with a bunch of people. I can see that.
You can hear some of the sound, I think, from the pool feed that we're getting.
Uh-huh. There's Governor Perpich shaking hands now with Gorbachev. And the president saying hello to Mrs. Perpich, Lola Perpich. And it looks like some flowers are going to be presented here. Senator Durenberger is there, yes indeed.
They're exchanging some pleasantries, it looks like. A lot of pictures being snapped here.
Congressman Bill Frenzel is there, among the members of the Minnesota Congressional Delegation. This arrival ceremony should be relatively brief, at which point they will get into the motorcade and head over to the governor's residence for lunch. Congressman Bruce Vento in the reception line.
You can see Mrs. Perpich is wearing bright yellow. They're kind of moving around to the cars now.
It looked to me like the Perpiches were not exactly dressed for the weather either. There's former Vice President Walter Mondale. As Gorbachev makes his way rather quickly down this welcoming line of dignitaries to greet him on arrival in Minnesota.
Then the governor and Mrs. Perpich are already on the way back to their car. Mr. Gorbachev, Mrs. Gorbachev apparently still shaking hands in there.
Attorney General Skip Humphrey shaking hands with President Gorbachev. Senate Majority Leader Roger Moll. Looks like Dwayne Benson, the minority leader, House Speaker Bob Vanasek. So President Gorbachev is meeting all of the political luminaries in the state of Minnesota in this brief.
And now he's coming to the end of the line. There's some more applause from some of the military personnel who are also acting as spectators here.
And at this point, Mike, do you see the Gorbachevs being actively waved? It's almost choreographed by someone who's standing in the front there, and there's a number of Gorbachevs modeled after the Homer Hankies of 3 years ago.
And there's President Gorbachev. We have a clear view of him now. He's surrounded by security people. He's waving to the crowd. And they're...
Well, it'd be an opportunity for him to make a comment here if he felt like it, but he's going up and shaking hands with some people in the crowd, isn't he?
Yeah, people with
absolutely.
The Gorbachevs.
Yeah.
That's the University of Minnesota concert ensemble we're listening to in the background.
This is what they expected him to do, and here he is doing it, not
right.
More than 5 minutes off the plane.
Yes, he's not wasting any time. Pressing the flesh, as they sometimes say. Live coverage of President Gorbachev's trip to Minneapolis-St. Paul, preempting our regularly scheduled programming today on Minnesota Public Radio. We're going to stay with this throughout the afternoon, in fact, until the Gorbachev plane takes off sometime tonight for San Francisco.
He's moving down the crowd a ways, waving. He's got a big smile on his face. Mrs. Gorbachev is waving. He's nodding. Just a sea of cameras and people waving back, even some of the press people are waving back. Now he's moving away, going back toward the cars, these Zeal limousines we've heard so much about, heavily armored limousines.
Oh yes, there they are.
Here there are some 8 inches of steel plating in the walls.
Well, I bet they don't get much gas mileage out of those babies.
No, they are literally built like a tank.
He's moving around and getting into the car now. And the crowd is applauding again. It's a festive celebration, even though, as we said, the general public has not been allowed to see it other than on TV and listen to it over the airwaves.
And just about the time the piece of music ends, Gorbachev gets in the motorcade. That was a propitious bit of timing there by Professor Ben Cresciuto and the University Concert Band. I assume that he is the band leader out there this afternoon. The limousine and the motorcade going to take off here momentarily, one would anticipate, for the governor's mansion on Summit Avenue in St. Paul, where a lunch with Gorbachev and Governor and Mrs. Rudy Perpich and a number of other folks is anticipated in about 25 minutes or so, I would suspect. Shall we go off to the governor's mansion, go across the street there to Catherine Winter, who is standing by? Well, Catherine, is there some air of anticipation now up on Summit Avenue?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Bob. There's definitely some heightened excitement. The crowds that we can see from here at the end of the street are growing. There is going to be a bell-ringing ceremony when President Gorbachev and Governor Perpich get here, and the bell-ringers have already assembled in front of the gates to the governor's mansion and have been practicing, which is really a delight. With me now is Karen Boros, who's come back from moving among the crowds, and she has had a better view of things and can probably let us know a little better what was going on down there. Karen?
Well, Catherine, at the far end of the street here at Oxford and Summit, there are a number of people representing various Baltic states with flags and native costumes and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. here to make their protest statement. And I also talked to a lot of the folks who weren't part of that agreement. But first here, let's hear what Bruce Johnson of Minneapolis had to say about the reason that the Baltic people are here.
Well, I'm sympathetic with the Baltic aspirations for the Imperial Russia to go back out of the Baltic countries. They unlawfully conquered the area in 1940, and they're unwilling to free the territory now. We gave back Okinawa and the other areas of Japan that we conquered in 1945 from the Japanese, but the Russian Empire doesn't seem to want to do that either with the Japanese territory. North of the main islands of Japan or the Baltic republics or Moldavia, the other areas in Eastern Europe. So I'm sympathetic to that.
That was Bruce Johnson, as I say, of Minneapolis, who is part of that protest movement up the street here. I talked to any number of people who had gotten here quite early. There were people who started assembling at the limited access spots where you can actually see the driveway or see the governor's mansion. People were out here by 10 o'clock this morning and have been sort of shivering through the rain and under the cloudy skies. If you go down the street and look back at the mansion, you can see that new patio that has been put out on the back is covered by an awning, and it has transparent plastic sheeting down the side. So perhaps they're going to do something out there.
All right, Karen, very good. The motorcade has now begun to leave Twin Cities International Airport, and they are certainly en route to the governor's mansion on Summit Avenue, and we'll be checking back with you folks in just a little bit. It is now about 4 minutes before 2 o'clock. This is live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to Minnesota. The programming on Minnesota Public Radio today is sponsored in part by John and Ruth Knutson on their 45th anniversary. Minnesota Public Radio's live coverage of President Mikhail Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities is made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley. And you're tuned to Minnesota Public Radio, a member-supported service. This is KNOW, Minneapolis-St. Paul. In the Twin Cities now, cloudy skies, 48 degrees, winds gusting to 30. At about 3 minutes before 1 o'clock. If you are just joining us, we have canceled our regularly scheduled programming this afternoon so we can bring you live coverage of the Gorbachev trip to Minnesota. He has arrived at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. The motorcade is now en route to the governor's mansion in St. Paul. From there, they'll be having lunch, then taking a motorcade tour up Summit Avenue, around John Ireland Boulevard, the Capitol area, heading on down towards Interstate 94 and on to the business meeting with leaders of business from around the area and around the United States, for that matter, at the Radisson Plaza Hotel. We'll stay with our live coverage through the departure of the Gorbachev aircraft, which is expected at around 8 o'clock tonight. It could run a little bit later than that, depending on what happens throughout the day here. The arrival was, I guess about 15 minutes later than had been anticipated, so they may either make up the schedule along the way, or they may leave just a little bit later. They have allowed a fair amount of time for lunch, and one would think, despite the grandness of the menu, that they could get through that in less than an hour. Of course, one wouldn't want to rush a thing like that, would one? We are going to check in here with Joe Kelly, our reporter up in Duluth, Minnesota, who has been visiting with some students from the University of Minnesota Duluth. Is that right, Joe?
No, Bob. Actually, they're students from Duluth Central Public High School.
Oh, all right.
They're 11th graders. They're all planning to go to college from the looks of it, but they're not there yet.
And what do they think about all this?
Well, we've been sitting around watching the proceedings on television. There's only one TV station up here in Duluth that's carrying it, and it seems like generally there hasn't been quite the level of interest here as there has been in the Twin Cities, and you might expect that since Mr. Gorbachev is not going to be elsewhere in the state outside the Twin Cities. But these students here sitting around in the rec room of one of their homes watching the TV do seem to have a great deal of interest in what's happening. They've been part of a world problems class this academic year, and it's been a pretty exciting year to be studying world problems, according to them, given all the changes that have been happening in Eastern Europe. There is some level of, I'm not sure what the word is, perhaps suspicion or uncertainty about the Gorbachev's visit and the purpose of it. They're all in agreement that it's a good thing for Minnesota, but there's some skepticism about what the significance of this visit to Minnesota is in the larger scale, on the global scale. And also, one of the students told me that she's a little bit worried about what the people in the Soviet Union might think with all the changes going on there this week, with Yeltsin being elected president of the Russian Republic and all the other political upheaval there. She thinks that perhaps the Soviet people might think that Gorbachev doesn't care as much about them as he does about visiting a relatively unknown state in the middle of the United States.
Hmm.
And that might be a bad reflection on him politically when he gets back home.
Well, that's an interesting angle on that. Thank you, Joe.
Okay.
Joe Kelly reporting live from Duluth and some students at the high school, Duluth Central High School there, who are watching the Gorbachev trip on a television set there. 2 o'clock is the time as our live coverage of the Gorbachev trip continues. Stephen Smith, who is the pool reporter for the motorcade, joins us by cellular telephone. What's up, Stephen?
Well, Robert, we are now making our way off the airbase here at the airport. The motorcade has more than 40 vehicles in it, according to officials here with the tour. There are about a dozen vehicles up front that are security and various advanced vehicles. The Gorbachev limousine is said to be somewhere around number 13. There are 6 or 7 of those Zeal, I think they're pronounced, Zeal limousines, the big black Russian limousines that we're all familiar with by now. And the rest are filled with security people. The governor's limousine is somewhere a few cars back, apparently, from the Gorbachev limousine. I am probably in car number 34, so I'm way back here, and I've got a long run to make if he does get out to meet the folks. And then behind me are some more vehicles that have the welcoming committee that met with Gorbachev out on the tarmac, and some more security vehicles. And then I think taking up the rear is a busload of police. I think I saw an MTC bus filled with police officers. So it's a long motorcade. There are people here running alongside as we make our way onto Highway 62. There are plenty of spectators here. And it's a pretty exciting event for them, I think, to be seeing this long motorcade with limousines passing by.
Stephen, of the news people there, how many of them would you say are foreign journalists, and how many specifically Soviet journalists?
As I understand it, here in the motorcade itself, Bob, it looks like I have to go here because Gorbachev's getting out. I'll talk to you later.
Oh, all right. Well, terrific. Stephen Smith will get out and cover that opportunity by Gorbachev to meet with some people, and we will probably be hearing from him a little bit later. He's the pool reporter, you understand, so he has to share this with everybody, and we can't get it any faster than anyone else can, even though he's our man there on the scene. Bruce McDonald, incidentally, who's at the airport, will now be going down to Control Data Headquarters. He is going to be the pool reporter for radio in that particular event. The time now, 2 minutes past 2 o'clock.